Okay, Madam Chair, board members, with that, we will move on to item number three, which is the public comment segment of this meeting. And my first speaker is Julie Pickett.
I'll text myself properly. Oh, it's on.
Yes.
Hello, I'm Julie Pickett. So I guess I'll start by saying that I am a person in long-term recovery. It'll be 11 years this Memorial Day weekend, and from both drugs and alcohol and mental health recovery. I could not have done that without peer support. That was incredibly important to me. It saddens me to know that we don't have enough funding for those services. It also saddens me that our systems are so overwhelmed right now that we don't have enough to go around, because in my opinion, we should have more of it, and we should have enough of it for everybody. What I see out there, my biggest challenges that I see, is just as much education for our peer specialists to educate the mental health system out there that patience is a virtue, that this process is a very painful, recovery is a very painful process, and it has to hurt for a while, and that's okay. And that's why peer support is so important and needs to be funded. It's not funded right now. It's not paid by Medicaid. I feel like it should be. Let's see. Sorry, I have to refer to my notes here. I've got my glasses on at that age. So we have great services. We've got CCS, which is, it incorporates the services to take care of people and, you know, give them that teamwork, so they can bring in probation officers, they can bring in case managers, they can give them that supportive housing. But then it comes to a point where it's almost intimidating to that individual, because it's impersonable as well, and it can set them back in a way that, where's my choice in all of this? And I know that they are given a lot of choices, but it overwhelms them, right? Where a peer support, and they're also given peer support in that mix. I understand that. But also in that mix, it's very confusing for them. Because you got to remember that most of these people are entering in that moment. Their prefrontal cortex has been disengaged for a very long time. They went back and forth from drug abuse, mental health. It's not working. So they learned not to trust. And again, we go back to that timeline. We go back to that timeline, that they're not going to trust for a long time. So that peer support is so important. If that peer support can take more time just with them, nobody else, just with them, and walk with them, meet them where they're at and say, you know what, I hear you, I see you, and it's okay. This is painful right now. Today it's painful. And we're going to stay right here with this pain. We're going to sit with it for a while. And maybe tomorrow, maybe a month from now, we're going to figure out how we're going to make this work. And maybe the case management will come 6 months from now. But that peer support just might be all they need at that moment. And they're going to go back and forth for a while. That's called the contemplation stage. We're talking about the stages of recovery. Because when somebody says, I'm in recovery, it doesn't look like maintenance right away. It doesn't look like my 11 years of recovery. And somebody says, guess what, I'm in recovery. It's not what it looks like. And that's where the confusion is coming in. So it saddens me that we can't have that peer support. We have to complicate everything. We've got to make it so complicated. So I'm from Monroe, Wisconsin. I've only been in Milwaukee a year. What attracted me to our space was that I could come into, that I could come into an organization and I could go into this day program and I could have opportunity to facilitate an AODA group. And I could say, come to this group and it's okay. You know, it is okay if you can't give 100% today. It's okay. It's okay. Because I'm quite confident that even if there's a want and a desire, that we can get you there. Quite confident. And our space is willing to give the environment for that and provide that environment. And people are coming, they want to be there. And that's what has to happen. The want has to happen. I can't tell you. As long as you have that want, as long as people are wanting to come, want to participate, they've got their own desire to participate, they're not being forced to do it. The police aren't bringing them there. The judge isn't bringing them there. They're wanting to come. But it doesn't get any better than that. But when I have to say, I'm sorry, there's no funding. It breaks my heart. It shouldn't be. It just shouldn't be. So, I don't know. I guess that's all. That's all I have to say. With that, I'll pass.
Thank you so much
for your time.
Our next speaker is Sue Gottich.
Thank you for this opportunity. My name is Susan Gottich. I am up here representing the Mental Health Task Force Steering Committee, and these opinions are of the Mental Health Task Force for recommendations to the 2024 budget. Thank you, Chairwoman Perez, and the members of the Mental Health Board for this opportunity. We appreciate the opportunity to share a frontline perspective with the Mental Health Board and Behavioral Health Services leadership at what continues to be a challenging time in our community. Many of our community members are struggling with their mental health, with substance use disorders, food insecurity, medication, and access to safe and decent housing. An increasing number of adults and youth with mental health needs are in our jails and in prison. We thank the BHS staff and other service providers for their work to provide essential support and services as we continue to address these post-pandemic challenging times. Our first recommendation, we echo the sentiments of the first speaker, Julie, is training for peer specialists. Peer specialists are vital to engagement, community linkages, and retention in care. There is a gap in care by the inability to offer peer specialist services to older adults and to be part of the continuum of care at Granite Hills and at the Mental Health Emergency Center. Our recommendation is to support the development of a peer support academy to offer state-approved training to individuals with a desire to become certified peer specialists. However, absent the development of the academy, there is a significant need to increase training capacity, and that should be prioritized. Please consider financing regularly scheduled training opportunities in an ongoing manner and communicate with leadership at Granite Hills and the Mental Health Emergency Center regarding the expectation the certified peer specialist will be on site and the importance of this service. Our second suggestion is housing. Recovery is not possible without safe, decent housing. Yet access to affordable housing continues to be an ongoing challenge for many individuals. Our recommendation is that the 2024 budget should continue to support collaboration with the Milwaukee County Housing Division including support for Housing First, partnership with the Emergency Shelter Network, and training for case managers about their responsibility to assist individuals with obtaining housing services, and clients' rights. BHS may also wish to consider strategies employed by other counties by using state opioid response funds and opioid settlement funding as a resource to expand recovery housing. Workforce concerns. The talent shortage is impacting every industry across the nation, and the need for innovative ways to build a workforce capacity is demanded now more than ever. Low wages contribute to the workforce emergency, and it needs to be addressed within the budget. High position vacancy rate in crisis services is the most concerning. Our recommendation is considering offering a transfer incentive for internal candidates. Some employers are also using a hire, train, and deploy model that offers mentoring to create career pathways for positions that require advanced training. Continue to use ARPA funding for retention bonuses. Market the county BHS as an employer of choice for candidates. If the county is unable to fill positions for crisis service clinicians, it is important to look at other models for providing these essential services, including the use of well-trained community responders. Jail diversion. Individuals struggling with mental illness and substance use disorders are overrepresented in our criminal justice system. Our recommendation is that the behavioral health liaison at the Milwaukee County Jail serves a vital position that works with individuals that have a mental illness and serves a liaison role to other community agencies, connects residents to care upon discharge to the community. The Mental Health Task Force supports continued funding for this position and further recommends expanding the liaison position to 2 full-time employees. There is increased concern about the number of people waiting to be sent to state psychiatric hospitals for competency treatment. Many of them are on misdemeanors. We need to do much more in a preventative way to support diversion and keep people out of jail waiting for treatment to competency. Too many people who are waiting lose their housing, their employment, and their community connections. BHS should work with the state to ensure additional resources are available in our community for competency treatment to reduce the number of people languishing in jail waiting to be sent to Mendota for competency treatment. County oversight for purchaser of services. County is now primarily a purchaser of services for inpatient case management and community-based residential care. It is alarming to see an increase in neglect and abuse reports in residential settings under contract with VHS, as well as patient safety concerns at Granite Hills. There is a need to have stronger oversight process to ensure that individuals receiving care understand their rights and that providers address concerns and have accountability. Our recommendation is an increase in oversight at service locations to ensure providers are meeting the quality of care expectations for each program that they are delivering, from inpatient to CBRS, CSPs, CCS, and TCM. Consider strategies that offer quality incentives or value-based payments for providers that meet care metrics. Increased monitoring and quality assurance effort for service locations in the dissemination of clients' rights, including how to submit a grievance in all service locations. And please consider the expansion of the BHS clients' rights role. Children and youth. Governor Evers declared this the year of mental health, and the county needs to consider budget priorities with high importance in mental health services. The latest report from Prevent Suicide Wisconsin indicates that 1 in 6 high school students have contemplated suicide. The Mental Health Task Force proposes efforts that reflect a budget that aligns with prevention and early intervention for youth. We ask the board to prioritize access to mental health services for our youth and to work with partners to address clinical and emotional needs for youth in our community across the continuum of care, from prevention, early intervention, and treatment access. If we increase prevention and early intervention, we can reduce the number of youth in child welfare or the juvenile justice system. Optimize the use of access clinics by increasing awareness. Too many community members are not aware of services available at the access clinic, as demonstrated by low utilization and the declining number of individuals that are served. At a time when mental health and substance use disorders are most needed, the promotion of these vital services within one's own neighborhood should be a logical approach to improve access to care. Our recommendation is contracting with trusted community partners, such as community navigators, who are known to the neighborhood to help with outreach, connecting, navigating, and promoting the services available at the Access Clinic. Consider hosting health fairs at the Access Clinic that are promoted throughout the neighborhood by those credible messengers. And lastly, the opioid settlement and harm reduction and prevention. Non-fatal opioid overdose is the leading risk factor for subsequent fatal overdose and represents a critical opportunity to reduce future overdose and mortality. Our recommendation is to support the continued availability of overdose reversal and harm reduction supplies through the public health vending machines, but expand low-threshold, at-home distribution supply efforts. Please take medicine to the people. Consider developing education and media campaigns to address misinformation and myths of fentanyl and xylazine. I'm going to stop my testimony for just 1 minute to share a story with you. Last week, I was at Pick and Save to pick up my own prescription. And I wasn't trying to be a secret shopper, but I just asked the pharmacist, can I get a dose of Narcan? Can I purchase a dose of Narcan? And I was told no, that I cannot do it without a prescription. I know there is a standing order in this state. I know that Pick and Save is listed as a list of pharmacies where I can get this, but even individuals who are charged with being part of the solution oftentimes do not have correct information. We have to be able to disseminate and to be able to correct the incorrect messages that are out there in our communities. Data are critical for ongoing educational and harm reduction distribution efforts. Please consider creating a QR code for fentanyl test strips and the Loxone packaging that asks a few simple questions, as those data that are collected may help guide further distribution efforts. This information that's on the back of the box is identical to what's on the inside. You can put your QR code here that says, when you run out of the dose, scan here. And this would be able to assist with those at-home efforts to take medication to the people. Prevention must be a critical component for the use of the opioid settlement funds. Please consider the vital role that early childhood development serves in addressing risk and promoting protective factors. Also, the role that positive adults have in helping children make healthy choices by reinforcing encouraging behaviors that build confidence and resilience. Milwaukee must invest in its future generation. We are losing too many lives to this opioid epidemic. The Mental Health Task Force members are ready and willing to be a resource to DHS. The task force is here to ensure that those in need of mental health and substance use disorder services are treated with respect and dignity. We are dedicated to engaging consumers in services that are trauma-informed and culturally competent. I thank you for your consideration of our testimony and for your service on the mental health board.
Thank you. Our next speaker is Tiffany Stark.
Hello, everybody. Thank you for coming here to listen to us. So, again, my name is Tiffany, and I am a mental health social worker, a substance abuse counselor, and community advocate. I've been working in this field for about 20 years. We are having a mental health crisis in our community. It was already bad prior to COVID, but now it's exploding. People are dying from domestic violence situations, addiction, and suicide every day in our community. This can be prevented if adequate mental health services were accessible and available. I'm very excited to hear the great things being proposed in the upcoming budget for mental health addiction issues, but this means nothing unless we can hire to fill these positions and fill the positions that are currently open. We have a hiring crisis. We need to problem solve this ASAP. Many providers are leaving Milwaukee County and seeking work in the private sector. We are very short psychiatrists, as many are retiring and not pursuing this career path, along with other professionals such as social workers and counselors, to provide these important services. Milwaukee County keeps false advertising saying that we have these wonderful mental health services to offer the public, but there's no accessible availability, but long wait lists. On a personal note, I had a client of mine that was on a wait list for 6 months. She needed therapy late yesterday. Instead, it took 6 months and she stabbed herself, and then I finally called the county and all of a sudden now she could start the program. That's just one example of many, many stories and hardships that I could talk about today. Well, that was actually one of the big reasons why I left my job at the CSP, because I had nothing to offer my clients but a pill. And a pill is not going to, you know, address the trauma that they need therapy for. So I felt helpless. What am I supposed to do to help my clients when I don't have the services or resources available to help these individuals? People are dying in our community from suicide, and it's kept secret, silent due to HIPAA. With no accountability on the public having any knowledge to address this. If somebody actually attempts suicide and survives, there is no way the ED, which is the emergency detention, should be dropped until they show they are engaging in treatment. I understand client rights, but this is significant. This just happened this past January, where a young person attempted suicide. This was a very serious attempt. This person knew what to say at the time and the ED was dropped. This young person then refused to participate in the treatment that was set up and agreed upon prior to the ED being dropped. A few weeks passed and this young person attempted suicide and was successful this time. There are many other similar stories like this that no one knows about, or they do know about, but just are keeping quiet. There is a mental health crisis at the Milwaukee County Jail. There has been 3 deaths within 7 months, and I'm really, really upset to report this. There has now been another death today. Now that makes 4 deaths in 9 months, which two have been ruled suicide. Both individuals had significant mental health needs, and this was all well documented. I feel that the Milwaukee County Jail is not appropriate or prepared to care for these individuals with significant mental health needs and issues. They need alternative placement. Milwaukee County Jail mental health services are privatized. It's uncertain regarding what policies and procedures are in place when someone enters the jail or even has been there for several months with mental health needs and issues. And what is the timeline before they are even assessed by mental health professionals? There needs to be community transparency, as the sheriff has all the power over the jail with no one above her to demand accountability and information regarding their policies and procedures. The Milwaukee County Board of Supervisors have been shut out as well. This needs to change now. Renita Ball had ran on transparency, and we've been trying to give her the benefit of the doubt and some time, but she has not so far have made Well, on her promises, we are asking for a tour and a town hall to address these issues, and she's continued to remain silent. So something needs to be done because this is unacceptable. Thank you.
The next speaker is Diego Santana.
Okay, is this thing on? All right, there we go. Hey everybody, my name is Diego Santana. I'm a representative of the Milwaukee Alliance Against Racism and Political Repression, as well as the Justice for Breonna Green Coalition. The Milwaukee Alliance has worked with the county in the past, and now we're back here. I'm here to draw attention to the state of the Milwaukee County Jail. You know, today there is yet another death in the Milwaukee County Jail, which makes it 18, you know, that we know about since 2008, and many of these were suicides. So I think it's very appropriate to bring this up, you know, to the mental health board, right? So the Alliance and the Breonna Green Coalition met with Danita Ball, you know, 2 months ago. You know, in good faith, right, we want to work with her and say, hey, you know, we want transparency, we want to know what the standard operating procedures are. Well, she pretty much wrote us off. And so that's why we're here, you know, asking, you know, does Milwaukee County Board have any sort of, you know, say in how these procedures are done in the jail, you know, how the sheriffs interact with, you know, people who are in crisis. So, you know, that's just one of the few questions that we have, you know, and I want to keep an open dialogue, you know, with the mental health board. You know, we all want a common goal, and that's the, you know, well-being of Milwaukee County and its residents. So if I can get some contact info at the end of the meeting, I would love to, you know, link up and discuss things such as this. Thank you.
Our next speaker is Maria Negro.
Hello. Happy to see you. And I'm speaking for myself. I just want to say, hola a todo mundo, and I have two important issues. Guess what? Developmental disabilities, mental health. Oh God, what a surprise. Number one, I want to make clear, and this is very important, that mental health can impact anyone with a brain, period, with or without developmental disabilities. But people with developmental disabilities is not a choice. Someone didn't say, oh, my life is so miserable that I'm going to do autism, or I'm going to become ADHD. They come wired like that, or Down syndrome like my daughter. And when we talk about peers, it's very important that a peer is a peer is a peer. It's someone that you can relate in your life experience, as I said last time. So obviously for me, a peer is someone that is in deep mental health crisis, trying to raise a child with an intellectual developmental disability and moving through the system defending them. Autism is growing, and we are seeing a lot of bullying. Let me bring you to my beautiful district, Milwaukee Public Schools, and they are bravely trying to do something. But at this point, those millions of dollars that are used for mental health are just for feel-well things. Oh, we're going to provide this, we're going to provide that. But when it comes to the serious, serious diagnosis of those children's schizophrenia, bipolar, you have to differentiate between us, early onsets of Alzheimer's, and other things. They cannot do it because they are school psychologists. So they need to refer, and they need to refer outside the system. And this is what is happening in the system. When it goes to a Spanish-speaking kid, guess what? No habla español. So let's refer to the 16th Street Clinic. Hey, not because Dr. Perez is here, because he knows I'm the number one, hooray, hooray, for the 16th Street Clinic. The district, maybe you should start thinking of putting 16th Street Clinic everywhere, not only South Division, because I'm seeing more and more children that the psychologists are referring them to the 16th Street Clinic, because the children are coming from horrendous situations crossing that border. with enormous trauma and without a clear diagnosis of what the disability is. So, peers, it's true peers, but we need more Spanish-speaking peers, we need more Spanish-speaking moms, and probably we need a lot more peers that are in contact with developmental disability. Because sometimes families just need to talk about that, about their child. We need to have more support for women who are alone and have children with developmental disabilities, because when they destroy their apartment, and I have a friend right now in that condition, they call the police and eviction comes immediately. And nobody's there to step for her. And she's not alone. So what I'm saying is, women with children should be your a very, very first priority. People with developmental disabilities should be a very first priority. A lot of women don't get pregnant and raise children, even when they have addictions, and when they have addictions, it's worse, because they are double victims. So, peers are peers, but we need more women peers. We need more individuals with developmental disabilities. I just have a good friend who is a therapist, an autistic therapist. A graduate from the leadership, education, and neurodevelopmental disabilities and related disabilities, which comes from the Weizmann Center and is part of the ABA Association of Universities for Centers of Excellence in Developmental Disabilities, nationwide and global wise, directly from the federal government. So I think that it's very important to start looking when we talk about peer, who is a peer, and how many peers are, and to have focus groups, community by community, let's not community, there are very different communities, and see what are the needs of those communities in order to understand how many peers we need here, how many of these, who should be covered this, in other words, have a real plan of action into that. And Spanish speaking is essential. Now, the second thing, and I think it's very important, you have to start thinking of having your professionals trained into the understanding of developmental disabilities. Because it's ridiculous that a young woman, not just so young, but a woman with Down syndrome, developing Alzheimer's, I can talk a lot about that, you know, is beginning to have dementia. She goes to Rogers and sorry, you can take, we cannot take you because we don't know how to work with this child. Sorry, we don't know how to work with non-verbal people. Sorry, we don't know how to work with them. Let me tell you what, my daughter, I feel very, very angry, and I feel very angry about a lot of her friends because they are taxpayers. They work very hard, and they put their taxes in the pool, and they deserve. And those mothers, believe me, they show to work. The CNAs and all of those women helping care for others, it's ridiculous. They show to work and figure out how they can do it and just break it without support. Because on my hand, there's no support for them, no peer support for them that will help them just simply with childcare. But at the same time, there's no support for them to have a professional that will take their children. And we are talking about underinsured or uninsured or simply not eligible populations to insurance. So I think that really, in order to justice, the first group that we have to do is all these very hardworking people that are being denied services because professionals think that they cannot deal with them because there's no proper training. I can give you right now 20 workshops how to do it. Right now there's a comorbidity from the ECHO Alaska going on, and particularly intellectual developmental disabilities. We just have a meeting on mental health and autism. So that's what I'm saying. That's what I really would like to see. I mean, not all the other things are important, but I want to see more professionals trained and more peers that are adequate in their support to the people. And I'm very passionate about this because I'm talking close to my heart. These are my homies with extra chromies, my kids dancing at the beat of their own drum. The mothers that make enormous sacrifices to keep these kids from the stuff. And I just want to give you another one. Go around and take a look at the life expectancy gap between us. No white groups and the white groups when it comes to autismo, ADHD, fetal alcohol syndrome, and all those. And see if you don't feel like this is urgent. Thank you. Any questions? No?
Okay, Madam Chair, board members, that was our last speaker who signed up, but I'd like to ask, is there anybody else in the audience who would like to make comments?
Sure. Yep. I don't know how to have a voice while I'm talking so loud. My name is Tara Reagan, and this is my first time ever sharing here. So I'm going to just be transparent. I think that y'all should be aware of a lot of things when it comes to peer support. Me in particular, I wear a lot of hats. I'm a supportive housing coordinator. I'm a licensed peer support, and I'm a CCS provider. And my past put me in this position. And I don't mind disclosing that. I'm a single mom. I have a 1-year-old son. I've come a long way. I'm familiar with the judicial system. I have a criminal background. I've also known what it feels like to be on federal probation. I came from dealings of a whole different lifestyle. Dealing with a man and going through a lot of different trauma. And I feel like that developed me into a better sister, a better daughter, a better woman, and it made me a better mom. And I'm speaking from a peer support side because I didn't have them services when I went through my trials and tribulations because I didn't know they existed. And I think the lack of resources that are out there makes it harder if you do feel alone. And when I went through those stages in my life, I wish I was a peer support dad. Because my son was born at 27 weeks. He was in the NICU for 3.5 months. And there were so many parents I was able to just give emotional support to and families just from talking to them because they were in the hospital as well. And just having an education with peer support that we've experienced, I was able to just provide resources just being a normal human being out here and being a mother that was going through the same things these mothers and these fathers was going through. So I advocate for our space because that was one of my first employers that gave me a chance to talk. And my criminal background and my lifestyle didn't shed no light. I was able to come to the table and be me, and I was not judged for my past life, and I was able to deliver that. I was born and raised here in Milwaukee, and coming from a population and coming from certain areas and being raised in certain communities, or what they want to say, low poverty or the hood or whatever they want to put it, there's a lot of resources that are uneducated in them neighborhoods. And it's because it's due to the lack of providers and the lack of experience. And it's not going to be easy for anybody of color that comes from a different denomination or culture to approach and be comfortable talking about the issue. You have family members. I have family members. There's moms that have kids that struggle with mental health, and they're their older grown kids, and they don't even know how to get up for their kids, and they're adults. So just to have that experience and given that opportunity, it allowed me also to advocate for the Parish House, which is another hat that I wear. I work over there as a peer support, which is the first peer-run respite in Milwaukee County. And the lucky part is they went state, which made it able for us to do any county in the state of Wisconsin. And we have people that come from Madison, from the rural areas that don't have those, resources, and they're coming here to Milwaukee for the resources and that emotional support. And so I'm just here to advocate on that behalf because peer support is vital. Because when I went through struggling with addiction and being in the court system and growing and maturing, I didn't know that existed. So now I'm an advocate to let people know it is out there. And the funding and the resources is vital because without that, you can't employ us.
I guess I just want to add that someone that is walking down the road of whatever road they're on is much more inclined to be honest and truthful and be them with someone else that's also walked a similar road. We do not, I'm going to stress what everybody else stressed, peer support is absolutely vital. I know for myself, I'd rather talk to someone that is my peer than someone that doesn't know me. They're going to see me for 20 minutes, take this prescription, and maybe you'll feel better in 30 days. That is not how it works. That is not how it should work. As for our space, we have that psychosocial day program. There is not enough of those in the city either. There's people struggling with mental health and substance use, and they just want to be around people that have the same similarities that they do. They don't want to feel like they have their stigma and that they can't and they shouldn't be talked to because they were or are an addict. That's crazy thinking. It is crazy thinking to me. Today we are out in the community doing outreach. It is the most exhilarating thing I've done in a long time. We came across a church on North 68th Street and it had a box and it was a blessings box. And inside it had little cans of food and ramen noodles and toothbrushes, so we paired with Tana from Milwaukee County and put our own hygiene products in there and our brochures and our cards that says if you need help, call us. We have multiple services. So I guess just in short, please really truly consider, because if you can go and see a psychiatrist, a dietitian, a trainer, all these other things and insurance covers it, then they should cover peer support as well. Someone that comes off the street of our space that walks right in the door should not have to go through CCS, should not have to go through a case manager. We should be able to offer them service the minute they walk in the door. So, I appreciate your time.
Thank you. Madam Chair, board members, I do believe that was our last speaker. Is there anybody else out there who would like to provide comments? Anybody? Sure.
Okay.
Come on, Maria. Come on down.
Lovely lady. If you are in the SSI, Medicare, Medicaid, and all the things, you go to the Milwaukee Art Museum, and for $20, they give you a family membership. Good for 1 year to two adults and at least one children, but the small children don't pay, so right, there's one good activity, right? And second activity, see, that's peer-to-peer, you're a mother. And the second one, April 16, there's gonna be a sensory sensible concert for kids who has autism or for whatever other reasons cannot do. Is the MSOE is going to be in downtown April 16 with the program introducing the children to the instruments, and after that will be the concert. And check your Down Syndrome Association, your autism South Central, all that for free tickets.
Thank you, Maria. Is there anyone else who would like to speak? Is that it? No more takers? It doesn't seem that way. We can move on. That is the end, unless we go to number 4, and that's adjournment. You ready?
Thank you.